Hey, this is Rob Liefeld, and you're listening to Matt, Ian, and Paul on the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 353 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello.
And Matt Cassell.
Happy New Year.
That's right, Matt. By the time you're listening to this, it is 2021. We are essentially recording this in the future? Past?
We're recording this in the past, but they're hearing this in the future. If, in fact, they're hearing it, and we did make it out of the horrible year that was 2020. I mean, it's still up in the air. We could still not, maybe not make it out.
We still have, what, 3 days to go? 4 days to go?
Yeah.
So who knows? Who knows if we actually are in 2021 or if we're in year one as we start over during year one of the apocalypse. But hoping that things go on relatively the same, we are here on December 28th to review Wonder Woman 84, or WW84. We all saw it over the weekend, released on HBO Max simultaneously with theaters. Matt saw it a mere hours ago because we made him. But before we get into Wonder Woman 84 talk, we like to do housekeeping, a yearly closeout housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
Everything must go at McSauce.com. We've got podcasts. We've got comic strips. For sale or, you know, for free, however you want. You can go on, tell the social medias and hit us up. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all the different places where you can have a conversation with us, suggest topics for the show. Tell us that we're stupid. Anything that you want on the social medias. This year, something that we're really proud of, we started a Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com, you can get specialized episodes for $5 a month. We give you 2 episodes. I hope that everybody that has become a patron of our show really liked what we did this year for you. I think we gave you about 30 extra episodes of different kind of content that we don't normally do. We did some introspective origin story episodes. We did a breakdown of a couple of movies. We did the Transformers first 3 episodes of the cartoon. Matt and myself have an ongoing video game sort of side podcast that we're doing. I know a lot of you like, and I know a lot of feedback has come in, and a lot of you out there really like the music episodes that we've done. So the Patreon is where you can get all of that exclusive content. And again, to everybody that has subscribed, thank you very much. By you subscribing, it helps pay for this show, the regular show, and helps us do more things, hopefully in 2021, if everything is still intact and the world still survives, maybe we'll get to do even more stuff. So once again, thanks for your support this year.
So what we all did over Christmas weekend, and Matt today, was we watched Wonder Woman 84.
When did you guys watch it? So Christmas was on Friday. Did you guys watch it on, because it came out on Christmas Day.
It came out at noon on Christmas Day. I watched it Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
I watched it Saturday afternoon as well. Saturday evening, I guess it was.
Okay.
Me and my wife had dinner, and we had planned to watch Wonder Woman, and it was going to be at a time whenever she was awake enough to stay engaged with the TV and not fall asleep. My wife falls asleep during movies a lot.
Well, this was not the movie for her then.
I know.
Was it?
It was a challenge. It was a challenge.
Not to bury the lead, Paul.
But yeah.
WW80 bore.
It was definitely something that we planned out at my house that we were going to watch at a specific time. It was going to be an event. We haven't had many event movies this year. The last event movie for me was Bad Boys for Life back in January.
Yeah.
Other than that, haven't been too many event feature films.
Man, that feels so long ago.
That's because it was.
So long ago. Yeah, Warner Brothers decided we're not just limiting this to theaters. You could see it in theaters and on HBO Max day and date.
They're only going to have it on HBO Max until like January 27th or something like that.
Right. You only get a month to watch it on HBO Max, which I think is cool.
Why is that cool?
Well, I guess I think it's cool in relation to Disney having Jumanji, or not Jumanji, Disney having Mulan, but you have to pay $30 for it, but it's up there all the time. Like, I'd rather have it for free
you
for
don't
30
still
days.
Have to pay that ridiculous fee though, right?
It's
oh,
a one
I don't
time,
know.
It's a one-time fee, but it is on top of your subscription.
So if I went to watch Mulan tonight,
you'd have to pay like $20.
You still have to pay that extra premium.
Yes.
You're sure about that?
Yes.
I don't know when it becomes part of the general just
catalog.
Disney Plus library.
Right.
Yeah. Because that movie came out a while ago. I don't know. I have no idea when or if they will roll it into the regular viewing library. I assume they would. I assume they're probably going to be dicks about it like they are with the Disney Vault and only put certain things up for certain periods of time. Yeah. But I don't know, even if now you still have to pay for it.
I really hope that you don't still have to pay for it and that it's part of the general
You're
library.
Right. It now you can just go on and watch it.
When did Mulan come out?
So, I don't
July?
Know. I think somewhere in the summertime. I think it was originally supposed to be a March release, but then you may have heard there was this like crazy pandemic that shut everything down.
No.
But I don't know, Paul. Would I prefer an outrageous fee on these HBO new releases, but then they always live within the library and then they eventually go for free, like after, let's say, 3 months?
Matt, I can tell you right now, if I would have had to pay $20 for Wonder Woman, I would not have watched it.
No, I don't think any of us would have, and I think we'd just be having this conversation 3 months from now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what HBO wants to try to avoid, is the delay of the conversation and the loss of the general zeitgeist. Say what you will about whether we liked Wonder Woman or we didn't. People are talking about it right now.
It's the only thing to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, as we're talking,
I don't know,
this
there was
through,
a lot of Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas talk.
Hell yeah.
Pre-show. Well, that actually held my attention a lot more than this movie did. But again, I don't want to tip my hand too much, Paul. I think I like the way that HBO Max is doing it. Now that we're kind of talking this through, let's say Wonder Woman goes away in January, bring it on back in March or April. And just add it to the library. The whole, it's going to go away because we're going to replace it with other things. I hate that, especially for these companies. Yes. Like, that would be like Netflix removing Stranger Things off of Netflix. You know, maybe we'll bring it back in 2 or 3 years. What? What?
Yeah.
That's original content.
That's your own property.
Right.
It would be like McSauce dumping the McSauce podcast.
Right. Yeah, maybe we'll bring it back. Craziness. It'd be like McSauce continuing without Paul for like a few months.
I'll
for
be
some
back
reason.
In April.
It's Eric. Like if we listened to our fans and stopped having Paul on. I think this gets complicated because there are so many different entities that are like moving with all of this stuff, even though it's the broad umbrella of Warner Brothers. When you start thinking about other properties like Dune and all those other things that are being folded into this greater umbrella of,
but they all own it all. They own it all.
Yeah. But I think that the way that contracts work, especially before you negotiate for the pandemic, there are different things that they have to consider and different ways that they have to pay people. And I think they had to restructure Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot's contracts before they were able to do this, or maybe they did it as a favor because they were going to earn money on the back end.
Right.
So to make them to not make them whole, but to make sure that that relationship was still firm, they had to do something because Wonder Woman, and this is honestly probably the first time that I've gone on to Box Office Mojo this whole year, which is kind of depressing. Wonder Woman only made $16.7 million this weekend. I would imagine that the way their contracts were formerly structured would be like they were anticipating like $200 million, $300 million or something like that. So that's a big drop.
Yeah.
Well, it is, but what's interesting about that, Ian, I believe you're correct about them incentivizing Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot, who, by the way, I saw was a producer of this movie.
She sure was.
Gal Gadot. Right. Which I'm not exactly sure what that means, but that's a fact.
I think it means you get a title put on your name and you get an extra little
A half a percentage.
Yeah.
So Patty Jenkins was responsible for the story. Was Gal Gadot as well?
No, this was a Patty Jenkins, Jeff Johns joint.
Oh, that's right. Jeff Johns.
I'm pretty sure Gal Gadot is just on because she's the star and she gets an extra little bump. It's like how most of the times in TV seasons, by the time you get to season two, the star of the show is also an executive producer.
Yeah, yeah. You don't see too many opening credit sequences these days, and especially for movies like this. But this had it, and that one kind of surprised me.
I think the opening credits were part of this movie's effort to make an 80s movie. Not just make a movie set in the 80s, but make an 80s movie.
Well, they tried throughout the bludgeoning 4 hours of this movie to make an 80s movie.
I think
they succeeded too. Hey, fucking congrats. It was like I was in 1984.
Except in 1984, it would have been an hour and 36 minutes long.
I think the Irishman watched this movie and was like, God damn, this movie's long.
Yeah, man. I guess we can kind of get into
I started it up and it comes in at like 2 hours and 31 minutes and I was like, wow.
Punishing. Man, I just kept thinking, how would I feel if I was in the theater right now putting up with this? I mean,
putting up with
this. Sorry, we're like, I don't think that it's any secret that Matt and myself did not like this movie at all. Paul, I think you're probably a little more lenient on it, but
yeah, I'm a little more forgiving. But you guys, and just, I mean, the general internet response that I've seen is just like, man, they dropped a turd. And I don't like Ian just said, I'm going to be a little more lenient on it this entire episode. But yeah, wasn't great.
Yeah,
it wasn't great. It wasn't what I want to. I don't even know if I want to say it was bad.
It was so tonally different from the first one.
It was.
They were like, I mean, like,
and that's fine. You can make a different movie. That's fine.
Yeah, that's right. But I think it was almost to the detriment of this one that the tone was different. Like that first movie worked so good. It was heavier and more serious and just weightier. And this one just didn't really have any of that. And like,
well, it just didn't feel like it had any stakes. I feel like there were a lot of,
it didn't have stakes. The fate of the world was at stake.
Right. But do you feel like the fate of the world, put Bane's hand on your shoulder? You feel in control? Like it didn't feel that way. Even though we were controlling everybody's mind, I was like, well, this is garbage.
The problem is, Ian, the last movie I saw like that was The Kingsman, the first Kingsman, where everybody was under mind control. And that felt like the stakes were higher.
Yeah.
But, I feel like superhero movies are the little boy that cried wolf at this point, where they're constantly telling you that the universe is at stake, and yet the universe is fine in the end every single time. That's why movies that are much more earnest and focus more on the characters and their individual problems or struggles resonates so much more with me, like Shazam. Yeah.
You could have knocked this down the 45 minutes, just shown me all of
to 84
the
minutes.
Diana, Steve, Trevor parts, and I would have been over the moon with it.
Yeah,
everything that wasn't them, because like the stakes for me were, well, fuck, Diana has to be the one to give him up.
Yeah, we're gonna
like,
have. We're gonna have to wish him away again.
She's been brutally in love with him for.
Like
80
years.
Yeah, 60, 70 years. Or and now, like, whatever. She's the one. Well, when was the first one? 1918?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yes.
And now we're in 84. Yeah. So someone do the math, because I'm not bothering doing the math. It's close enough. But, yeah, like, that was the heartfelt part to me. Like, all I wanted was that stuff. Every time we weren't on Diana and Steve, I didn't fucking care.
Because I don't think it to me, it felt like they didn't really... It felt like the story of the movie was an afterthought, and the chemistry was what they're like, the chemistry will carry this movie for 3 hours. It'll be fine. And it's like, that's not going to cut it. You're going to have to,
but
not
it,
only.
It doesn't cut it when the characters that have the chemistry are on screen for half of the entire thing.
Yeah, you're
like, we spend so much time with Max Lord and
yeah,
man, do I love Pedro Pascal, but yikes.
Same with Kristen Wig and having I get it. It was cool in the 80s. You have a nerdy science person. What a comic trope. We'll go back to that well, but it just felt so surface level and underbaked.
Yeah.
And it also didn't function in the world. Like everything doesn't have to be interconnected. It doesn't have to be dark and brooding and all interconnected and this leads into this different universe. But you have to explain a little bit. Whenever a character has been around for 80 years, well, and you're telling me that in 1984 they resurface, and essentially everybody in the world should have some knowledge of this event that happened where people's minds got taken over and this golden goddess came out of nowhere. It's like people would know about that. Even if it was, hey, remember that weird time that we were at the food court and that lady with the lasso came through?
Yeah.
People would remember that. You have to make it make sense in the world that has been built. And that stuff doesn't... The fact that nobody remembers yeah. Wonder Woman is kind of stupid, I think.
It was kind of stupid, but whatever. I think that's the least of this movie's issues. I think one of the biggest problems for me is the movie's called Wonder Woman 84, as if it being set in 1984 is relevant in some way, which it is not in any way. The only significance of it being set in the 80s is used for comic effect. That's it.
It's set so that we can put, yeah, we can put Steve Trevor in a fanny pack and have
right,
Gal
exactly.
Gadot wear some cool, sharp, you know, 1980s
right, leggings
woman.
And all
like,
kinds of jazzercise.
Could easily been
yeah,
anytime.
Yeah. I mean, there's the... Yeah.
They're trying to cash in.
Been, it could have been anytime. You know, greed is not limited to an era. But I think the idea of the opulence of the 80s is what really drove the character of Max Lord in this movie.
But like, we never really got to see or feel that. Like, we never got to see...
Because he's fucking poor the whole fucking time.
But he really wasn't all that poor, and he really wasn't all that out on his ass. Like, I think we should have seen a more steep ascendance of what was going on with him and him doing more things outside of just granting wishes. Because after he gets that power, he doesn't really do anything with it. He just goes around granting more wishes. You don't get to see him really be powerful, I don't think,
but that's part of the power. Like he amasses so much power. He gets, you know, black gold off the ground and everything's rocking and rolling. But then he realizes, oh, fuck, this is a monkey's paw.
But
and
they
I'm
don't
also dying.
They
so
also
now
don't actually
I need
explain
to keep
that.
Doing
you just have
they
to
do. They do explain that. Then because he tells Barbara that on the plane, because she's like, well, you're dying. It's a give and take. And he says, well, then I'll just keep taking. And that's why everything escalates. I'm not saying I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it works on the level we wanted it to work, but it is all in there. It's just like it's not, there's just no nuance to any of it. Like everything just beats you over the head, and there's no, I feel like the only reason he has a son is because they finished writing it and they were like, oh, there's no reason to care about this guy. He's just a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah,
because he's horrible the entire time.
Some kind of like placeholder, and that son doesn't have any, like the son doesn't do anything. We are just meant to like the son because he is a child character. Yeah,
right.
And to me, honestly, I'm like, are we sure that that's his son? I don't feel like it's his son. He didn't
there
seem
was
like,
something about him that didn't, didn't quite add up.
Yeah.
I think Max needs to start asking some questions, Dave.
Yeah.
Well,
it didn't seem like that son had, like, we should have seen them do more stuff together. There should have been a little bit more of building up that relationship there so that we care, because we don't care.
Right, and that's part of the problem. Like, my biggest problem with the movie was everything about Max Lord. Like, every time he was on screen, like, and man, Pedro Pascal was so good in The Kingsman 2. He's great as The Mandalorian. But in this movie, he was just so irritating the entire time. And it's like they were like, oh, we need three-dimensional villains if we're making a 2020 superhero movie. Like, we need a gray area villain. We need to care about this guy. He needs to have, you know, pathos. Give him a son. That'll make him, he loves his son, right? That's kind of good to balance the bad. And I feel like that's the exact conversation they had.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that's not good enough. Your parents need to be killed in the Holocaust.
See,
that's how you make a gray area villain.
See, but here's the thing. Like, I don't think I've seen a lot of people commenting and reviewing this movie, and the people that have liked this movie, their problems with it are, well, the things that are wrong with it are all connected to comic books and comic book lore and
what the fuck was connected to comic books in this movie?
Yeah, I was like, well, that's it. And the you know, at the end, the big, you know, CG mess fight with Cheetah and Wonder Woman. I'm like, those weren't the problems. The story was poor. You essentially also, another thing that I have a problem with. So we've seen Wonder Woman a couple of times in Justice League and Wonder Woman and Batman versus Superman fight these really large world-shaking problems, these aliens and these monsters from other dimensions. She's very powerful. She can stand on her own and really be a savior to the world. But what are we doing in the first scene that we see? We're swooping around the food court. And is that whimsical and fun? Maybe, but I think that that's sort of, that takes Wonder Woman and knocks her down a few pegs. And I know that my wife mentioned, she was like, they made Wonder Woman stupid. And I felt like it was just because, well, we need to make this so little girls can think it's fun.
I liked the food court stuff.
I did
actually.
Too.
I think that was a poor use of.
It doesn't need
Wonder
to
Woman.
Start.
It's not
like,
but
there.
it never really. In my opinion, it never got. She never felt godlike at all.
Well, because she doesn't need to be godlike when she's fighting some just like dumb jewelry store robbers. It's like
I kind of
acquainted it to the scene in Superman where Christopher Reeve pulls the cat out of the tree. And, like, she's being really sweet with the girl. And, like, Wonder Woman isn't even breaking a sweat during all that stuff. She's just fucking around, doing what's right, stopping a robbery. Like, I think she can do both. She can, you know, stop street-level crime. And whenever she needs to get out the big guns, you know, she can stop Steppenwolf.
See, to me, they did a better version of that in Justice League when she stopped the robbery. Like, that was the better version of what they did in the food court. The food court just had the dressing of the 80s-ness, but also a lot of, like, goofiness to it that I think knocks it down. Like, not only are you doing that same thing again, but you're devaluing
your main
character.
What was the robbery in Justice League?
It was
like a museum robbery
in France.
Oh yeah,
that
was kind of
that
interesting.
That was rad. Like that was a better use.
Yeah, that
of her
that was very cool. And I think this was a lot more airy, a lot more lighthearted.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine. You can make an airy movie.
You can, but I think it's for me, it was kind of one of the big discrepancies from what I really liked about the first one, which I watched over Thanksgiving, so it was still fresh going into this. And this one is that, like, a lot of the first one was really serious. Like, there were a lot of really fun, you know, situational comedy in it with, like, her and Steve. And, like, all that chemistry is just through the fucking roof. And, like, there was, like, her and, like, you know, Etta Candy, like, all of it really worked. But all of it was played very serious, where a lot of this movie just wasn't. Barbara Minerva winds up being, you know, not Otis-ish. I don't think she was that bad. She wasn't Jamie Foxx's as Electro bad, but she's still like nerdy, quirky scientist. And Max Lord is just, I don't know what direction Pedro Pascal got. They were like, just go to 12 every fucking time. Like, I was like cringing every time he was on screen. I was like, I can't do any more of Pedro Pascal. And part of me wanted, I love Pedro Pascal, and like, my brain was making apologies. I was like, well, he's really reaching for it. He's really making some powerful acting decisions. He's just going for it. But at the same time, I was like, this whole character is bad. It's really, like, I didn't like anything about it.
I literally thought to myself as I was watching it, remember when we saw The Last Jedi? And they used the words hope and spark like a bajillion fucking times. They used the word wish in this movie like 9,000% more than those fucking words. I couldn't believe how many times I heard the word wish.
You did need to use the word to make
it
Max
was
Lord
so
activate.
Much of it though. And
as soon as you said wish, he was like, oh, he came in his pants and your wish was
maybe
granted.
That's why it was set in 1984, because every time he had to do that wish thing, mm-hmm. he had to touch you, and he was not respecting social distance protocols.
Yeah.
And that's how you got away with it.
I don't know if like his wish powers were an analog for coming or like cocaine high, since it was the 80s.
It was probably
well, he did get the nosebleed, yeah, so...
Shoot, I did hear a interview with Patty Jenkins. They're reading a transcript of an interview, and she did mention something about this movie was meant as a subversion for the superhero genre, and she wanted to backdoor in a solution where the hero wins without killing anybody and wins in a conversation. That is all fine. You still have to write the fucking movie. You still have to put structure and form
right,
to
right.
a movie
there
to
were,
make that all work.
Exactly. And there were elements that I liked, but like as a complete package, it didn't add up. The sum of the parts was greater than the whole in this case. I thought it was actually pretty cool that Wonder Woman was careful not to really like paralyze any of the people that she was fighting.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I didn't need her to bust out her sword and chop the bank robbers at Radio Shack or whatever their heads off. Like, that's fine. But, and it didn't need to be that aggressive. And it is cool that she did win the day with her words instead of, you know, breaking Max Lord's neck like
right.
she did in the
there
comic
was,
books.
And I really did like the optimistic approach to doing a superhero movie, especially in the 21st century, they tend to be a lot more cynical. And it was refreshing that there is a character that stands for truth and honesty, like the most basic of good principles that tend to get forgotten when we, you know, look to our heroes. I liked that, and I liked that they kind of doubled down on it, and I liked that it was, like Paul said, an airier experience. And I will also say this about the return of Steve Trevor, which when I saw the trailer, I was like, well, that sucks. That's stupid. You just totally undermined the first movie. Couldn't have been more wrong. They did it in a way that completely made sense. It was completely acceptable. And I liked it. And I liked that she had to make that selfless decision to send him away again because he's fucking dead. And that's the truth,
Matt,
Paul.
I loved all the Diana, Steve Trevor stuff. The beginning of the movie where, you know, she's having dinner by herself. And then it's back to her apartment and the camera's panning through it. And it's just all the pictures of everyone that's been long gone. And like, she's really by herself. And like, a lot of that felt very much like the first movie. If like, those are the parts that I was like, oh, this is a direct sequel to Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And I thought that they brought him back in a really cool way. And it was just heartbreaking when the realization comes that she has to let him go. And she's the one that has to let him go. I absolutely fucking loved it. Every second they're on screen together. I love those characters. I love the way they're played. And I think that's why I'm having a hard time like hating this movie, because there was a lot of it that I really loved. What I didn't really understand was why he had to be in another guy's body.
Yeah, that was weird. And also, and I said this to my wife, if you're going to have that body switch, like, that's a very 80s trope. How fun. You know, we're trading places. We're switching bodies. Could we maybe make it an actor that looks wildly different than Chris Pine? Like, that guy looked very close. You could have just had that guy.
Right. It should have been Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should have been something very different so that, and then, I don't know, then you could play on the comedy element.
That's right.
Of
they could build
her
Clay
walking
together.
Around and doing
if
stuff
he,
with
if
Whoopi Goldberg.
If he re-inhabits
Goldberg,
Sister Act, it's,
no, it's from Ghost.
It's not going to have the same punch. Yeah, I know what it's
okay.
from.
No, I mean, but that, like, that's, if you're making an 80s movie, that's how you do that. Like, that's the proper way to do that. That's how you do those jokes. That's how you set all of that up.
Yeah, like, I guess what, like, I was kind of curious about was that dude, who I guess we saw again later at Christmas at the end of the movie, right? That was him, right?
I believe so. Yep. I don't know. Maybe it was just handsome man number two.
Right.
Who knows?
What happened to him while, like, what his consciousness, like, while Steve Trevor, like, did he just die for a little while? Like, did they switch and that guy was now dead?
What happened to his family members? Did his boss call and wonder where he went?
Well, they seem to. I don't think he was gone that long. I think the whole thing takes place.
But what happened to
over
him,
like a week
to Matt's? So where does your spirit go for a week? Whenever Chris Pine is
there
is in town.
there is no explanation.
When Chris Pine sets up residency within your soul.
But we seem to understand at the end that, like, he's, you know, in the beginning when Steve's, you know, touring Diana through this guy's apartment, he's like, oh, this guy's just like kind of a, you know, pretentious guy, but he's still a bum. And he's the real guy once Steve, what's his name?
Trevor.
I couldn't get Rogers out of my head. Once Steve Trevor checks out of hotel guy number two, then I think, like, that guy comes back and they try to let you know that he has a better understanding of the world and he appreciates things more because he's talking to Diana at the end and he's like, man, like, the snow is so great, and just, like, seeing all these people, like, it's great. He, like, it's that you really need to.
But by that time, who could ever fucking care?
Well, that's my point. I'm like, why? Just your conceit is a fucking wishing stone.
Yeah, like, we don't need
Diana
that.
Didn't wish for his spirit. She wished for Steve Trevor, and
right.
That is Chris Pine. Just bring him back.
Right.
Just bring him fucking back. He shows up. He lands
and
on the fucking lawn in you know, DC, and
whenever,
he just has his old flight suit on, and he's like, "What the fuck?" Like, he doesn't have to.
It would have been so funny when she renounced her wish if he just would have dropped dead.
Yeah, I think that
instead of just walk around the corner and you don't see him again.
You assume he just kind of disappears, but yeah, if he's just. Collapsed
or he explodes or something.
a lot of meat on the comedic bone that they just left on there,
right?
Like, I feel...
Come on, Patty Jenkins?
If they were going to... If this was going to be an 80s movie, they really could have went harder. They could have done more work to make it an 80s movie.
The stuff that we're talking about now about, you know, like, you know, having him inhabit, you know, Michael J. Fox's body and then he turns into a werewolf. It's such comedy stuff. Like, if this was a real comedy, those were the lanes to go in. To really mine that 80s territory.
That is true. It's a fine line, Ian, because like we were saying, like the only 80s shit that really made it, like, were the only reason why they seemed to have it was so they could make comedy jokes. There was really nothing, literally nothing. Maybe, Paul, to your earlier point about the kind of the opulence of the 80s, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, but they're doing Maxwell Lord as a Gordon Gekko-ish kind of thing. And like,
Ian,
you know.
I actually thought about you when I was watching it. Were you...
Oh, my God.
Were you disappointed when they go into the Oval Office and it's not Reagan?
I was. I did.
I was like, what the fuck is it? Who is this?
Yeah.
Who is this?
Honestly?
Well, he looked like Reagan, and they never say his name.
He doesn't look like Reagan.
He didn't look like Reagan. If you're doing Reagan, you can do, like, he looks you can like, do Ronald Reagan.
He looks like Reagan more than Matt does.
He had more than
he
me,
had Reaganish similarities.
He didn't. If you're doing 1984, you have to do Ronald Reagan. You have to make it like that guy had the brownest of brown hair. Like you have to. It's like they just were like, ah, that's good enough. Everything about this movie was like, ah, that's good enough. It's close.
Good,
nobody's ever going to notice or care. You specifically said 1984. You should pick things that happened in 1984 and
right,
like, kind of build a little bit of a movie around it. It just felt fucking lazy. Like they wrote it on a napkin and were like, let's roll, let's do it.
Right. It felt like they were capitalizing on kind of the little bit of this 80s kind of nostalgia kick that we're on mostly because of Stranger Things. I think the shit that happened in the mall in Stranger Things felt more 80s to me than the shit that happened in the mall in Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah, this like that the mall stuff could have been it could have been anything. Just like I was saying,
I did notice they had a Walden Books though. I like that.
I like that as well. Yeah. There's just a lot of stuff that they could have done better and it seems like they just didn't think about it or care.
Yeah, it definitely was disappointing because I had pretty significant expectations considering how good the first one was, but it started to make me wonder, woman, if did Lucasfilm jump the gun and promise Patty Jenkins a Star Wars film before we saw what the reaction to this was, similarly to what they did with Rian Johnson, promised him a trilogy before we saw the reaction, whether people like this or not.
Same thing that happened with Colin Trevorrow whenever they promised him a movie and then the Book of Henry came out.
Yeah.
It was a steaming pile of poop.
What's the Book of Henry?
It's a
exactly.
bad movie. Matt, it's funny you say
that. What is it, seriously?
It's a bad movie. I've never seen it, but it's been raked across.
It was
the
movie that that Colin Trevorrow directed after, and I think he might have
Jurassic
like
World.
Wrote it or produced it on top of that.
Sure. Can either of you tell me what it's about?
No. Neither of us have seen it,
but
we know
it's not
bad.
Good.
I said the same thing to Paul whenever I was texting him about sort of my general reaction. I would be hesitant if I was Disney now. I would think that maybe I made a mistake by giving Patty Jenkins a big feature film in the Star Wars universe after, you know, this, an uneven record, we'll call it. Wonder Woman, the first one, very good. This one, I think very bad.
She directed the movie Monster, which has a lot of critical acclaim. I've never seen it. And then there's another movie. I'm trying to remember what it was. Damn it, I can't remember. She doesn't have that big of a track record. But I am not excited about her making a Star Wars movie anymore. I kind of was into it, and then I saw this, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, it looks like she did a lot of TV, a couple of episodes of Entourage, Arrested Development, The Killing. So it looks like she mainly comes from television.
If Star Wars can give her an outline maybe. And like, I don't know, like the first Wonder Woman movie is really good.
Wouldn't it?
But this one was so, it was so off. It was so different. Like, it was so weird from, like, the first Wonder Woman movie is so personal. It's all about Diana and where she came from, what she's going through, and how she sees the world. Like everything, even though we get to the end and, you know, Ares is essentially ready to blow up the world, it's still about what Diana thinks and what Diana's experiencing and what she's been through. Like, it's a very intimate movie. Only half of this is, because half of this is Diana's love with Steve, and the rest of it is Barbara Minerva is a really sweet girl one minute, and then she can't give up world-dominating cheetah-like powers two minutes later, she vaguely mentions
whenever she's like, Apex Predator. I don't know anything.
I don't know why they
it could have been
fucking...
anything. It had to be a cheetah.
Yeah, like, I was like, oh, is she going to be a hawk?
Right.
I don't remember how...
a dinosaur? Like a Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Amazing.
I don't exactly remember how her origin story comes along in the comics. I think in the original comics, she's just like a girl
like
in a cat suit.
Oh, I thought eventually, the new version is she's like
becomes like mutated cheetah person. But I think it has something to do with, she is a zoologist, and like she stumbles across some old artifact that imbues her with cheetah powers. It's not like, I want to be Diana.
Would have made more sense than wishmastering yourself into any apex predator will do.
And it's her turn so fast that, like, why bother showing us the scene where she gives the homeless guy food and she has a relationship with him,
so she can vaguely shit on him a couple scenes later.
Yeah, so she can just flip the switch and just be super evil immediately.
Also, I'm concerned about the streets of 1984 and how much like sexual predator stuff is going on. The same guy that assaulted her one night and got beat up by Wonder Woman was then once again the next night out on the prowl
drinking again
ready to rape. He didn't learn his lesson he didn't learn his lesson. He was standing in the same place.
Did you notice
oh, this is the lady that I got my ass kicked the last time I tried
did
to
you
rape
notice
her.
That every man in this movie
was
evil,
except
for the one from the 19-teens.
Yes, and he was good.
He was the good one.
Yeah,
but nobody,
the body that he inhabited, and even him being good, he still displaced a soul. So,
right?
Maybe that's what the movie Soul, the Disney movie that came out the same time.
Maybe that's that guy's story.
It is
that they're connected.
So, guy number two inhabits the body of black guy from Soul.
Yeah, so then you have to watch Soul Man.
Soul opens with that guy looking in a mirror going, I'm black!
So, okay, we're kicking the shit out of Patty Jenkins, but I think somebody, and you brought his name up earlier, somebody that's not taken any kind of shrapnel that maybe deserves some, Geoff Johns. Geoff Johns knows the DC universe, is well-versed in this character, and also helped write the Green Lantern movie back in the day, which
also not good.
Not good.
Which
so,
had a lot of the same problems as this one did.
So is this less Patty Jenkins' fault and more Geoff Johns' fault that he can't write movies? Should we stop? Should we revoke his movie writing card?
Maybe he also can't write comics, too. I mean, like, outside of the Green Lantern run, what has he done? Okay.
He did a good Superman run as well.
Did he do a good Superman run?
I liked it, and I don't like Superman.
I loved his Shazam story that
he
did.
He had arguably the best Flash run with Wally West.
Okay,
yeah,
so we can write...
Flash Rebirth, which was not good.
Flash Rebirth sucked, but he did a run... He did a run on Flash before he did Green Lantern Rebirth that is hailed as one of the best Flash runs.
Okay.
Like, he's done a lot of really good comic stuff.
But maybe movies aren't his forte, because the Green Lantern movie he was heavily involved in, that didn't work. He's credited as story by on Wonder Woman 84. Yeah. This did not work.
Did he do the story for Wonder Woman 1?
Possibly.
I don't think he did.
I don't think he did. Ian, prove us wrong.
I don't know. I'm not.
Ian is typing feverishly.
Alan Heinberg was a screenplay by him. And isn't Alan Heinberg is a famous Wonder Woman writer, correct?
Yeah. He's done some Wonder Woman. I think when I think of Alan Heinberg in comics, I think of his Young Justice work.
I think of the Terry Dodson Wonder Woman.
Loved that Terry Dodson run.
I thought that he was the writer on that. Maybe they should have gotten him to write this.
Yeah, like
I used to love Terry Dodson art, and I kind of don't at all anymore. Even the stuff I used to like.
It's very samey.
Yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah, it all looks the same.
I feel like once he...
Few people have a consistency like Terry and Rachel Dodson.
I mean, they're killer, but it all looks the same.
Terry's a guy, right?
Terry's a guy. Rachel's his wife.
Okay, so once he got to... I think he drew the Princess Leia series when Marvel first got the Star Wars license.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of where I was like, not really interested anymore. And even looking at his old stuff, like the old Spider-Man Marvel Knights, I'm like, it's not that great.
Yeah,
it's
I really like that Marvel. I loved it at the time,
but when I look at it now, I'm just like,
He did a run on X-Men for a while, too, that I really liked, but now looking back on, I'm like, these are all the exact same pose. They're all doing the same stuff.
Yeah.
We digress. Sorry, this isn't a comic books podcast. But yeah, Alan Heinberg, screenplay of the first Wonder Woman movie. That makes sense that if that's who wrote that and that's who wrote that series of comics, that it would feel that way. So
Geoff Johns never wrote Wonder Woman, or did he?
I don't know.
I don't think he did outside of writing the character for
God various damn it, Geoff Johns. Projects. Maybe Geoff Johns, don't concern yourself with these movies anymore.
Yeah, like, I mean, this movie's taken, man, it's just getting beat up. But, like, I like the mall scene. I thought the car chase at the end, or towards the end, was really cool. Like, I love seeing...
Like, in the Middle East?
The tank chase?
Yeah, I love... Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was all part of a really convoluted, like, just so wildly... complex, like this is affecting this in the Middle East and now the Russians and the nukes and blah blah blah.
I couldn't possibly tell you how Max Lord taking over Stagg Industries results in outright nuclear war.
Right.
It should have been so disconnected. What I did love though is as soon as Max Lord called that guy Simon, I was like, oh my God, that's fucking Simon Stagg. And then 10 minutes later, they say his full name because, man, that guy looks just like the fucking comic book character. When we talk best comic to movie adaptations,
yeah,
that fucking Simon Stagg actor, I was like, holy shit.
Who's Simon Stagg?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Simon Stagg is the guy that accidentally creates Metamorpho.
Do not know.
Who was he in the fucking movie?
He's the first guy that Max Lord tricks out of his business with the white hair and the tinted glasses.
Okay.
Yeah, so overall, the real bummer of a movie. Thought I was going to have a really, really good time.
It looked like it was going to lean into like the bright colors of Ragnarok and, we're going to get, not necessarily be a comedy, but like we're... hitting a different gear for superhero movies.
Even if it was a comedy, I think that would have been fine. It just felt like everything felt like an afterthought. And they're like, we're just going to try to make sure that you guys like the 80s, right? You guys like this chemistry, right? Here we go. We're going to put a fucking movie together.
Yeah, everything, like the rest of the foundation, though.
I hate the, I also have seen online, so there's the one side of online that is like, didn't like the movie for whatever reason. And then there is the side of online, love the movie, and if you don't like this movie, then you fucking, you hate women, and you hate this, and you hate that.
Last Jedi defenders.
And I'm like, this is a disturbing trend, because I see the same things bubbling up on these movies that are trying to be inclusive and represent a set of people that maybe haven't seen themselves in these movies before, but you still have to make a good movie. It doesn't excuse you for making a bad movie. I'm not, and it's okay, people on the internet, for you to like this movie, but you have to then also realize that it's a bad movie. I like bad movies. It's fine. you have to make a deal with yourself that this was not a well-written movie. There's some decent chemistry, but the plot was bad. The story was bad. Some of the characters were really bad. It was a bad movie.
Yeah, Ian, I think you make a pretty good case for it being a bad movie, even though I struggle to call it bad because it did have good stuff to offset the fact that it had a bad, convoluted, kind of unnecessarily confusing story. Like, the performances I thought were actually okay. I thought Pedro Pascal appropriately chewed the scenery, and I didn't really have a problem with his over-the-toppedness as much as I did his motivations and the way that he was written. I thought the performance was fine. I liked kind of a corny villain like that.
Yeah, maybe that's the distinction that I need to start making.
Well, I mean, he was certainly hamming it up, so I don't know.
Like, I think this is the other side of the coin for Batman v Superman for me. That movie is a bad movie, but there's stuff in that movie that I loved. And the same thing can be true about Wonder Woman 84. There's stuff in this movie that was really cool. I loved all the Chris Pine, Gal Gadot stuff. I thought it was cool. I like the general design of that. I like that golden uniform that she was wearing. I thought that was cool.
Oh, I hated it.
Did you? I thought it was cool.
Oh, my God. It looked so ridiculous.
I thought it was cool.
I literally thought, I wonder how embarrassed she must have been walking around on set wearing that fucking thing.
It looked like
I thought it was cool.
It looked like it was probably kind of heavy with all the wings and shit like that.
I'm sure she had the underlying bodysuit on, and then the rest was just CG'd.
It reminded
me. Or she had the top on, very COVID style. She had the top on, and then her boxers on.
Yeah, it was probably just like the helmet and then bodysuit with dots on it.
It reminded me of like the different suits that Batman in the 90s would put on at the end of the movie, like in Batman and Robin he put on the freezing suit, or in Batman and Robin I think he put on some kind of armor suit, and it was just like, can you just wear the regular costume? It looks so much better than this garbage.
The regular costume is killer, but I thought it what it was supposed to be, I felt like it looked like it was like a mythical hero's suit of armor, maybe kind of jazzed up Lord of the Rings style, and maybe I'm just in that mode right now.
I don't know. I thought it worked for the story. And once again, like her, that Amazon competition at the beginning, like, just show us, just make us an Amazon movie.
Yeah.
Like, that shit felt
like, I was kind of bored by that, to be honest with you. It felt like
outtakes of
Lord, or it felt like Harry Potter, sort of like a Quidditch match or something.
It was the Maze Runner,
right? But like, but there was no build up to this great competition where you're, you know, like anticipating this. You know, it's like giving you the Rocky fight at the end of Rocky at the very start, and there's no build up to it. Mm-hmm.
Would you have wanted the flashbacks peppered through the movie?
It was,
and then by the time she learns the lesson of not cheating,
I don't know. Maybe.
As a kid, she's also teaching Barbara the lesson of not cheating at the
perhaps
end.
Perhaps. I don't know. I haven't thought about it that deeply, but I did notice this. It wasn't until about almost an hour and a half until we saw Wonder Woman again, outside of when you saw her in the shopping mall, where you only saw like a couple flashes of some red, white, and yellow, or red, blue, and yellow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of, don't we do the same thing? Didn't we do some of the same things with like the Tim Burton Batman?
Yes, right. Yeah. That's like some of the older stuff. And granted, I do long for some of the things about those superhero movies, but I think there's things that you still want to try to avoid. Like in Godzilla, you have to wait so long until you actually see Godzilla, and maybe it worked for what that was, but this is the sequel. Like, don't hide this character from us. Like, we've seen her before. Like in the sequel to Godzilla, you got Godzilla, a lot of them constantly, because that's what you came for. There's no reason to build up to it anymore.
much like The Dark Knight Rises, you can count on one hand the number of minutes that Batman is in his costume. It's like The Dark Knight peeks in.
So let's, why don't we close out this episode with what we liked about this movie? Let's try to finish out 2020 on a positive note. Ian, you're exempt because I know you didn't like anything about this movie.
That's not true.
Yeah, that's not true. You weren't listening to me. I said that the Chris Pine and Gal Gadot chemistry is undeniable and very charming. And honestly, if you made a whole, if you wanted to make that whole movie, they probably would have had a more successful movie just about their relationship and the complexity of him coming back and her feelings and having this great, the wish that she has to wish him away. I think that would have been a more interesting movie.
What if it turns out that handsome guy number two was just a psychic and he was playing mind games with
God, that would have been so funny if he walked up and she was like, all right. And he was like, do we know each other, lady?
It was so weird when that first happens when he comes to get her at that party because it's Chris Pine's voice. And like he's like, Diana. And I'm like, the fuck is happening? It's Chris Pine. And then like she turns around and it's that guy. And I'm like
I was confused too.
Undercut all of the emotional, I would have fucking cried if she turns around and it's Chris Pine standing there because you hear his voice a couple times and then you turn around and it's some fucking guy. And
no,
I'm like,
no, I thought it was
cool.
You
need to wait a little bit for the camera to turn around them. And I understood what was going to happen, but I don't want to have to figure it out. Like, give me that emotional punch of, this is the fucking guy at the other end of the room that she's been waiting 30 years for.
I like that the audience had to figure it out the same way she did. Like, it took a second.
Leads into my greater problem with that is, like, why? If you have a fucking wishing stone and you can wish a guy back to life, why are you just wishing his soul back?
Right, why
are
you
why not just make it Chris Pine? I'm sure they had their reasons. I don't necessarily agree with it.
Yep.
Matt, was there something that you liked about this movie?
Well, I think that chemistry between those characters obviously was strong in the first one, and they realized that they pretty much struck gold with it, so you got to bring it back, and I can't believe that they did it in a way that I found acceptable. So I give it credit for that. I mean, even though I thought that the 84 setting was kind of pointless, it was still fun. I did like that it was a shift tonally from a lot of 21st century superhero movies. I felt like it was a bit more in line with like a Shazam or some of those Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, which I greatly prefer to the more Marvel Studios style movies. I think Gal Gadot is still perfect for Wonder Woman. I think she's a really good actor. I think that like her emotion in the first one and the second one when she loses Steve is powerful. So I think the performances were excellent. I think there were a couple good set piece moments. The road kind of car chase action sequence was pretty cool for the most part. I liked the moment when they were flying in the jet, like with the fireworks. I thought that was like a cool, like Superman kind of like almost iconic moment. Yeah. Spider-Man kiss, not the Daredevil Elektra in the rain kiss that they tried to do on that one.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. The seesaw battle.
The seesaw fight was something there. That was a kiss in the rain to Evanescence.
Right.
a classic. Some may argue.
Yeah, so I mean, like, it was like a vignette of, like, individual cool parts that didn't come together because it had a crappy story. So those are the things that I liked, though.
Yeah, I'm on board. All the Gal Steve stuff. Like, it was, I loved all of that stuff. I love slowly seeing her lose her power. I I don't really agree with the thing that she holds most dear is her superpowers. Like, I think,
is it the ability to
monkey's paw? Like,
is it the ability to save people?
Maybe. I mean, we can spin it that way, and it makes a lot
like,
more.
We that, also that would more. Need to write that into the movie and explain that, but
right. So, like, we're inferring things now, yeah. And I like that a lot more. So, I'll go with that. But I did love seeing her lose her power and keep fighting. And you know, I've said a ton of times on this podcast, I love when a hero gets the shit kicked out of him. One of the reasons I love The Mandalorian, he is always getting the fucking shit kicked out.
That's why you like the Star Wars sequels, because Rey is like getting the crap beat out of her, and she fails so many times before she triumphs.
She's beating the shit out of everyone else.
Oh shit! I'm sorry.
We were miscommunication. But yeah, like I love when she gets shot, and Steve's like Chris Pine plays it so perfect. He's like, you can just see in his face. He's like, oh, fuck. This is serious. And she's like, we're going to keep going. And they play those characters so great. And the whole monkey's paw bit of having to, she wishes him back and she has to wish him away. It's so fucking good.
What's the monkey's paw? You keep saying that.
Monkey's paw is like a cursed, just a general cursed object that grants wishes. Like I think there's a famous story where the monkey's paw, like you have so many wishes and it keeps like the hand keeps closing.
The monkey,
but it's cursed
because you get your wish, but there's a twist on it. Like you wish
your
child dies, you wish them back, but they come back as a zombie.
You want to be thin.
Oh,
there's
so
always
it's
like
Pet
a,
Cemetery.
Yeah. You want to be thin, you're thinner.
Right, but you want to be thin, but you keep losing weight until you die. Like, there's always, like, a horrible twist on it. Like, you know, Diana wishes for Steve back, but she loses all of her powers.
Yep. And she has to go through the anguish of losing him again.
Brutal. Brutal.
A double paw.
Yeah, it's like a monkey's foot in there, even.
Yeah, throw a monkey's foot in there. Who knows?
Man, paws, you know, tails. There was something else we hadn't mentioned yet that I really liked, but you guys just threw me off, and now I can't think about it.
Save it for the next episode.
Do we want to give final polynomics on this guy?
Sure.
Ian?
Or I guess it's not. Is it really polynomics once we see it? Is
no,
it just a rating?
That's polynomics is before we see it. It's more trailer reaction. Yeah. This is more our final score.
I give it a 4. I can't imagine a world that I'm going to rewatch this movie. So, was I entertained enough for about 15 minutes worth? Now, I will say this. Holy shit, would I go back and watch another Wonder Woman movie if we get some better writing? Because Wonder Woman as a character in Gal Gadot is great. So, give me Wonder Woman 66. Let's go back in time.
No. Wonder Woman 96. But the only thing... I mean, now... They've done it twice. Now it needs to be part of the shtick. Bring Steve Trevor back and kill him again.
So, yeah, I give it a 4. But it with that said, I'll go see another Wonder Woman movie in a heartbeat.
Matt?
I'm going to give it a 5. I think if we're treating, you know, the 10-point scale with 5 being right there in the middle, I didn't love it. I didn't hate it either. But I was really bored by it. I thought it was stunningly boring in a lot of parts. And I found myself not really caring. I think that Gal Gadot's performance and emotion that came through is like the parts where she was kind of taking me along for the ride. Not because of the storyline. I think it was her and her performance and her overall kind of like charisma and stage presence. So, Ian, I agree. You want to make a third Wonder Woman? I'll be there. I'll watch it. Maybe somewhat reluctantly, Paul, but I'll watch it. And hopefully I'll give it better than a 5, but this doesn't deserve better than that.
Yeah, Matt, I'm with you entirely. I love Gal Gadot. I love Steve Trevor. Give me the Paul McGinty cut.
Do you want to touch my arm and wish for it?
That is no, because then I'll wind up losing my dick or something. Give me the Paul McGinty cut when it's just all the Gal Gadot Steve Trevor scenes. all of Diana Steve Trevor scenes. That's it. Everything else, I don't really need it. And that's why I'm having a hard time, like, really smashing this movie, because there was a lot about it that I really liked, but there just wasn't enough to make it, to make me really like it, or to make it good. So I'm also going to give it a 5, and I'm also in, give me Wonder Woman 3, because I think there's another really good movie in there. I think we can really bookend a Wonder Woman trilogy with two really good movies.
Maybe Wonder Patty Woman Jenkins 3, it takes
it out.
It takes place 3 years after Jesus was born.
Also set at Christmas.
Right. Jesus is 3 years old in it.
Baby Jesus. No, that's who she has to protect. It's the Mandalorian, but with Wonder Woman and the child.
Jesus, but Jesus' spirit gets kicked out from Steve Trevor.
She has to fuck a baby. That'll do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Yeah, that's right. Paul McGinty.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.